Hi, everybody in podcast land and also on YouTube. I'm James.
I'm David.
I'm Sarah.
Whoa. And this is the Carpool Critics Movie Podcast. And today we're talking about 1979's Alien.
Spoiler alert.
You're not Riley.
I'm sorry, I'm not Riley.
No one in this room is Riley. Riley had a chungus. Riley's at home. He has a child now.
Aww.
Congratulations, Riley.
Congratulations.
And his child was born 1 year and 1 day after my child. So they shall be forever linked, in my mind anyway. So in Riley's stead, we have Sarah here. Sarah
Hello.
Butt. She works with us. Her last name is Butt, spelled the way that butt is spelled.
That's true.
The 2T way. And she is a designer here and a bona fide movie lover.
Yep.
Particularly horror? You're like,
oh yeah,
into horror?
Horror, thriller, you name it. I love it.
I don't listen to Michael Jackson anymore since leaving Neverland, but.
Oh, same.
Yes. Okay. Rating out of 10, David.
Alien is the perfect movie to put on when you really need a nap. Just kidding. Oh, no. I'm kidding. But not really, actually.
So many people just turned it off already.
Yeah.
They're gone.
Yeah, my real slogan. A space goo-soaked masterclass in suspense that has rightfully grown into the iconic horror monolith that can absolutely never be cloned. Do not clone Alien. And no clones in Alien. Never clone anything in the Alien franchise. It's stupid. 9 out of 10.
Are you knocking Alien Resurrection?
Are you defending Alien Resurrection?
No.
Kill me.
Oh my gosh.
Sarah, what do you give this movie?
This 70s thriller is guaranteed to leave you with an uneasy feeling in your chest. There's a reason why Alien is a cult classic, and even after 40 years, it still provokes a genuine movie experience that can never be duplicated. 9 out of 10.
More cloning memes. Nines. Two nines. Holy.
Yeah.
Well, God, you
yes,
know.
You get to be the bad guy. Yes.
I think I'm the bad guy.
Oh, no.
This movie deserves respect. As you said in your slogan, David, it's a kind of a masterpiece. It's highly revered. Everybody knows this. Everybody loves it. But looking back retrospectively, it's a weird position to look back on history because some of the movies that followed it suck. The immediate sequel is great, but I watched it. I went back. Some of the elements I loved. Some of the elements I'm like, this is boring. This is 1979. So I'm rating it as I always do with my eyes today. And I'm giving it 7.5. It's great. I love this movie. You know, I wish I had two mouths with which to applaud it. But I don't. Nor do I have as much slime or KY jelly on me. Yeah, 7.5 out of 10, baby. Alien rocks.
That's not bad.
Pretty good, yeah.
Yeah. It's a good movie. I
think there's flaws. And like, I think it's totally fair to, with modern eyes, kind of criticize it for having a slow pace or kind of having some tropes that we've seen repeated since that are kind of less exciting.
But I like the slow pace. Like, I like the buildup. There's a lot to like, and we're going to talk about that right after this message from our sponsor, Private Internet Access. PIA is a VPN that helps you hide your true IP address so that you can bypass geo-restrictions and censorship. You can connect up to 5 devices at once, and it includes an internet kill switch, Sarah. Make a noise.
Kill me.
David. If your VPN gets disconnected involuntarily. PIA is available for Windows, Mac, Android, iOS, and even as a Chrome extension. So check it out at lmg.gg/carpoolPIA. And I guess since Riley isn't here, I'll give you the synopsis of this movie. The crew of an intergalactic mining vessel, the Nostromo, are awakened from cryosleep to respond to an unidentified beacon from an alien planet. On it, Kane, played by John Hurt, gets an alien wrapped around his face, which the Nostromo crew bring aboard without quarantining, as per procedure. Turns out, the facehugger pumps egg juice into Kane's chest, from which a second alien is born. That one escapes, grows, and picks off crew members one by one until Ripley, played by Sigourney Weaver, shoots it out of an airlock and roasts it with the jet engines. And that's how I react when I'm past my bedtime, too.
Why don't we start with the stuff that I think still holds up really well today? I think the design of this movie,
no question,
oh my gosh, incredible,
unbelievable. Like the alien design, the ship designs, the interiors, oh, the yeah, two different kind of alien ships. I think it's so cool, and it really does look modern in a retro way.
So the design from the artist, that's Geiger.
Yep.
He have you seen that documentary, Yarnofsky's Dune? It's this documentary about this crazy director. He made that movie Holy Mountain. Have you heard of that? It's this weird, like, wacky movie. I think it's a foreign film.
Yeah,
and that guy was going to make a Dune movie. But then David Lynch ended up doing it. And they spent like 2 years making this Dune movie. And he hired Geiger and others to be the artists. And a lot of the artwork that was created for that is really reminiscent. And I guess kind of because the project fell through, got carried forward onto Alien. Huh. Although Alien does have other, he had other influences for Alien.
I can't remember. Are all the designs in the Dune movie, are they all going to be penises too?
There's a lot of like, it's almost like everything's made of leather and it's kind of studded. A lot of like spiral shell kind of patterns, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like when they walk onto that ship, you really see the artist's influence the most clearly when they get onto the spaceship on the planet at the beginning of the movie. I love that part. It's so awesome because they're in a completely different world. They're on a ship that is made for beings larger than them, right? So all the doors are too big and the walls they have to rappel down. And you can see when they're rappelling down that wall to where the eggs are, it's like kind of curved. There's like these like buttresses that go through the whole building. It's really like organic looking. And I think that really sums up the style, as does the giant throne with that that awesome dead alien in it.
I think it's called the Space Jockey, but they mentioned that in the next movie, I believe. So super interesting. And the set design is gorgeous. Like, that's definitely something that I notice a lot nowadays when I'm watching movies, is just the effort that they put into those kind of things. It's insane.
Well, even like the little things, like what comes up on a screen, like in 1979, that took a lot more effort to design every little word that comes on. Whereas now you just be like, okay, create a video, pop it up.
But I actually had a question about that. It was almost one of my gripes. I was like, why is it that all the screens in technology from that era are all, they all look like Pong. They're all like beep, 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 and like,
that's what computers
this
were
text
like.
Just comes up. And I'm like, could people not imagine photorealistic graphics on a screen, or could they not represent it even if they could imagine it?
I think it's a combo. They definitely couldn't represent it, but I also think, I don't know, I think it gives a certain charm to that kind of movie. The same with Blade Runner, when you go back, it modern movies all have the same feeling in technology because we can imagine a lot of the same things, like clear screens or like holograms and whatever. And when movies are in this weird time period where they started to have an understanding of what the future would look like, but they couldn't quite grasp like the specific images of it, I think it makes something a lot more unique and with a lot more flavor.
Yeah, it's like the cars from the 60s where they have those big flared fenders in the back because they look like spaceships because everyone was high on space.
Yeah, whereas every car in the 90s looks like the same thing.
Yeah.
I love it.
And I think like now too, it's so much easier to recreate stuff with CGI, where back in 79, obviously, they had to try to make everything by hand, which obviously gives the movie a lot more of an authentic feeling because the actors are actually seeing what's in front of them versus big green like figures.
Yeah, they're all reacting and like everything's in camera and everything's practical and that's sweet. But when it comes to the stuff on screen, though, they didn't have to just make it using whatever computers or analog stuff they had available. They could have done like, they had cameras. Like, couldn't they, for example, when the ship is landing and you see those, like, what do they call it? Like, the topography. Like, and it's, like, line drawings of the topography in the relief. And it just looks like what you'd expect it to. It's, like, green or whatever. Couldn't they have just, like, been in a helicopter and filmed topography and then, like, saturated that to, like, red or something? Or, like, taken one color and then put, and then comp that onto the screen that they're looking at? And
I think yes, but then it starts to be too foreign for the audience of that time, where, like, it starts to feel, like, too advanced. And like this, I think one of the strengths of this movie is that it feels grounded in some industrial like limitations, where like the whole ship isn't the most advanced ship in the whole universe. It's a mining ship or whatever it is. And it feels more like that. And I think for 1979, especially if they were doing that, where they were taking videos of more advanced things than they could actually display at that time, it would start to feel like a more advanced ship. And I like that feeling of groundedness.
Yeah, let's keep talking about that. That ship is awesome.
Yeah.
It's so utilitarian. You get taken through the halls like early in the movie, and it's just like pipes and exposed circuitry. There's no like, other than in like the infirmary, there's no like cushions or nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Despite being revealed to us in an opening shot that's a lot like Star Wars, where this giant miniature goes across the screen for like 30 seconds, when you get inside the ship, it's nothing like Star Wars.
Yeah. That first shot with the miniature, I don't know if it was just my video, but it was really shaky. I found that like distractingly shaky when like the text pops up. and it's like Nostromo carrying like 200 million tons or whatever. The actual ship is like...
I actually saw that a lot throughout the movie.
Yeah.
There's lots of pans and miniature camera and miniature movements that are kind of juddery.
Mm.
And yeah, I don't know what the deal is with that.
Did you guys notice anytime there was an exterior of the ship and then would be like the cockpit, they would have like just like little video projectors of what the actors would be doing in the screens, but then it made it feel like the miniatures were especially small, and it was so cute.
I didn't see that.
Oh, no, yeah. Me neither.
Anytime, like, there's a shot where it's pretty wide of the whole ship, and you can see the bridge or some level of the deck, and there's a window, and Ripley's, like, walking across or doing something, and it's just a little projection of Ripley. But the effect, the optical effect that happens is that the ship feels so tiny, and it's, like, becomes very cute, and I was like, I'm really enjoying this.
When you say it's a projection of Ripley, you mean, like, they had the miniature and then a little projector,
yeah.
And they projected it onto the miniature. Oh, okay. No, I didn't see that.
No.
Cute. Though I found the miniatures in general felt small, and apparently they were smaller than they were supposed to be. Like the miniature of the ship was supposed to be big enough that the actors could step out and like go onto the planet, but it ended up being so small that they couldn't force the perspective, and they had to hire children.
Oh my god!
And so those are all children in the spaceships, both inside, outside the ship, and then also inside the alien one. And I think inside the alien ship, it was less distracting, and it serves to make it feel huge because it's like these tiny little figures in this big ship. But when they first walk out of the ship, I always found their movement kind of like weird and janky.
Okay.
I think I read actually that inside of the alien ship, it was Ridley Scott's kids who were acting to make this big space jockey look bigger than it actually was. Yep. So that just to sense. Add to that.
I read a review from Roger Ebert about this movie, and coming back to the whole like, can you watch it with fresh eyes thing, is one thing that I could not comprehend. But he could, watching it for the first time. Because we've grown up with, like, Alien just exists, you know? By the time I'm even, like, a teenager, there's, like, 4 or 6.
You know
like,
that egg's going to be...
AVP. Yeah. I know that the egg makes a facehugger and the facehugger makes the alien thing, right? But he was saying in his review that when you see the space jockey and then you see the eggs, you might think that the eggs make more space jockeys.
Yep.
Like, that's how the aliens that you just saw the dead body of like create themselves. You don't actually know what the hell is going to come out of
it. It's such a clever twist on what you would expect. It's like, oh yeah, normally an alien plants an egg and those eggs become that alien. But it's like, no, there's an extra step. And it makes it feel even more foreign and more, alien.
Yeah.
And I really like that.
That's super cool. And I totally agree. But then I thought about it for a while and I was like, wait a second. We kind of do the same thing. I make sperm. There are intermediaries. Like the sperm goes and then it makes the human. It's just that... It doesn't do that in an egg outside of anyone's body.
That's an interesting idea. If your sperm was like sentient and could like attack people.
Yeah. Or like my sperm is just like a face hugger on a
modern
culture. Yes. The ovaries.
Yeah. Oh, Lord.
Wow.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Man, speaking of like aesthetic things, something I love in this movie, and I don't know if I'm the only one. Maybe I'm not. I don't know. But the title, just like the way that it comes in line by line.
Insane.
It's so cool.
My designer instinct was like, this is beautiful.
It's so good.
Yeah. No, I totally. Oh, my God.
It totally like I love the way that it does this slow build. I think I like the first half of the movie better than the second half of the movie. But like the slow feeling of dread that's becoming more tangible and more into straight horror. I think that title sequence works so well.
Yeah, and it really has an interesting tone.
Yeah.
The music that's playing during it isn't like that ominous. It's just kind of ominous. It's, I don't know. It's kind of like Blade Runner-y. It's got some high notes in it.
Yeah.
You're kind of just like, oh, we're in space.
At that point, it's not pure horror. There's a few times where it kind of dips into being like a Star Trek episode. Like when the camera's traversing the hallways and it's got like this like jovial tone and it's just like, and it felt like a Star Trek episode and I found it weird. And then but I think overall the score is excellent. I love how it mixes industrial with kind of more organic strings and kind of more like classic horror sounds. And I think it works. It's really effective.
I actually found that the music might have been something that made me not as scared of this movie. Like what makes it less of a horror movie to me. Just what I expect, like the film language I've kind of internalized for horror, what the music's supposed to be doing during certain suspenseful moments wasn't happening in this movie.
Yeah.
So it keeps me from like, I was never scared. I don't really even consider this a horror movie, really, although I guess it is. And I think the music was a big part of that.
Well, I think people are hesitant to call it like a horror movie because generally horror is kind of a cheap genre where like horror movies that are intended just to scare you are like not that good of movies, but they're effective at scaring you. Where people are like, oh, like The Shining's not horror, it's like thriller, or this is like sci-fi suspense. And so I don't know, maybe Sarah,
well,
you watch lots of horror
movies. There is high horror.
Yeah.
There's high horror.
So. I always categorize my genres, scary genres, in like three categories. I always go thriller, which is more based around the plot. Then we go horror, which is like kind of a combination between the plot and also making sure that there's enough gore or stuff that's like creepy to really keep you watching it. And then there's slasher, which is like movies that are mostly based around just that like grossness factor of making sure that there's enough blood and gore and everything that the movie stays interesting.
Fair enough.
So I would say that Alien is a thriller just because the plot is like a really big part of the movie and you don't really see too much gore.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's a pretty cerebral movie.
Totally. Yeah. Well, it's funny. I was watching videos before I even rewatched this movie, and a lot of them call it a cosmic horror. And before I rewatched it, I was like, no, it's like a monster movie. And like, I can, cosmic horror, there's something ethereal about it where you can't grasp. It's bigger than your imagination. And like, there's something this. And on this rewatch, I was like, it kind of is. The first half, especially before the facehugger and the little alien are kind of shown, the sense of horror is about the unknown. It's about this feeling of like, we are so small in this
universe.
Yes,
that's exactly it. That is cosmic horror to me. When they land and they see that giant ship and then they go into it, it's like, you are just a speck.
Totally. And that's, I think, what I like about this movie is that first part, even though it's the slower paced half, it's like this, the cosmic dread you get is so unique and like so powerful. And I haven't watched a movie that does it in the same way.
They kind of have multiple different horror elements because you get the cosmic horror at the beginning. Then you get the body horror when this thing is impregnating the dude.
Yeah. Mm.
That is actually a little more short-lived than I'd like. We can come back to that in a minute. And then after that, you get the kind of monster movie, It's Picking Us Off.
Yep. Yeah.
And then the size of the ship, like, at the beginning, we see that it's really large. It's weird. It's simultaneously really big and really small. You know what I mean? It's big enough that we're like, God damn, this alien could be anywhere. But it's small enough that it's like we can't escape and
it's
going to get us.
It's always close.
We're captive.
It's a coal cargo ship. So like I guess its main intention is to carry coal from Earth or one planet to another planet. So like a lot of it is just like taken up by that, assumably. And then there's like the smaller areas that are for the people, the crew that are on the ship.
That's a good point. Yeah, like there could be these whole kind of cargo containers that are not really habitable.
Yeah, we see a lot of ducks. I assume there's a ton of ducks on that ship. Like just tubes. And I really like those like sphincter doors.
Apertures? Yeah, you don't have to be sphincters.
Apertures, yeah, thank you. I totally didn't think of that. But
I love that sequence when, what's the captain's name?
Dallas.
I love that sequence when Dallas is going through the vents because he kind of has a sense of responsibility because he was pushing to get the person that was infected with the facehugger onto the ship. So I think he feels this personal sense of responsibility. So he's going into the ducks alone with that flamethrower and they're tracking him. And like all of a sudden they can't track the alien anymore and it's coming. And like that whole scene, I love that sequence. I think that's my favorite like straight horror of the movie.
Yeah,
I was a little mad that they weren't like on your left.
Oh,
to him, you know, he was just like, it's coming towards you. And he's like, which way? They're like, what? We don't know. Maybe you should establish that.
If that was me, I would be like everywhere that flamethrower, everywhere it's going.
I think he also wanted to get in there because Ripley was like, I'm going to go. And he was like, nope. And part of it is his leadership, but part of it has got to be the role of women, like the sexism aspect to it. Because that, I feel like that's a big part of this movie.
Oh, it totally is. Like, Ripley is this strong, badass female lead character, and you kind of see her, like, taking her stance. Even in the beginning when she wants to help out the captain and the doctor, and they're both like, no, you go work with the other lady on board. And she's like, screw you guys, like I'll be on the bridge if you need me. And I really loved that there was like a strong lead female character in this movie. It made it more enjoyable for me almost because you don't really see that even like now.
Totally. You see in horror all the time that like the one who survives is a female.
Yeah, the virgin.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. But in this one, she's a bad bitch right from the beginning. Yeah. Like when that scene rules when she doesn't let them in. When she's like, nope, That's protocol. Yeah. And they're just like, God damn it, Ripley, listen to me. This is what we're doing. And then at that moment, you're kind of like, yeah, she's probably going to be like, fine, it's your funeral and open it. But she doesn't. No. She still is like, nope. Yeah. That's fucking awesome.
I love that. I love that the way this movie is set up. There's no, she's not set up as a protagonist from the beginning.
No.
It's just that as people are removed, she kind of falls into that role.
Yeah.
And I love that she survives, not because, yeah, not just because she's the woman, not because she's the purist, because she's the only smart one. She's the only one doing what she should be doing. And even at the end, like, she wins because she outsmarts, like, the situation and the alien. And that's brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's actually just data driven. And it's actually, if you think of horror as in, like, there's always, like, some kind of sins that in Act One that they have to atone for.
Yeah.
It's like, and in this movie, the sin is not listening to the women, actually.
Yeah, 100%.
There's actually three different parts where it's like, we should leave. This signal is a warning. I can't let you in with that alien.
Yeah.
All three of those times, Dallas in particular is like, shut up.
Yeah. You got to do the right thing.
So maybe that's part of the reason why he wants to get in that duck. He's like, damn it.
Totally. Yeah, I think that's totally fair, where it's like the masculine heroism that Dallas shows gets them all killed. And like, that's kind of a criticism.
And also, not to mention Ash, the robot scientist doctor who is very much focused on the science aspect versus the well-being of everybody on the ship. I think he plays a big role in like pushing everybody away from Ripley and being like, don't listen to her. I'm the one who knows what I'm doing.
Yeah, totally. So. Yeah,
they foreshadowed him pretty well. They're like, throughout, totally. You don't learn until pretty late that A, he's a robot, and B, that he's... his objective is just to keep the alien alive and nothing else.
Yeah.
But you don't need to know that. Throughout the movie, you already distrust him. He's already doing things. You're like, what the hell?
Yeah.
I love it. I love that reveal when like he is being revealed as a robot and he's having his like freak out. And like the way he moves is so weird.
Yeah.
But it's so effective at being like, yeah, that's a robot.
Yeah. The only immersion breaking part of the movie is actually during that scene where you can tell it's a mannequin head, model head, and then they like do a frame wipe, like something passes in front of the camera, and then suddenly it's his real head, and you're like, okay.
Yeah, the other like kind of bad practical effect is that I think the only facehugger in this movie, when it jumps out, I found that like the motion of it moving out didn't look quite right, and it's because it's just, they had a facehugger out and they pulled it in and then played it in reverse.
Oh yeah, those never look.
Yeah, and so it just looks a little bit off.
I didn't notice that, but I actually think the chest bursting scene, unfortunately, is the least well aged scene.
That's
when
fair.
It comes out, it's like you're like, oh, and then the way that it rotates, the running's bad, but when it just rotates, you're like, oh yeah, that's just a spinning rod. Okay, and then it skitters off like.
It doesn't there's
ridiculous.
No like up down, it's just a straight track.
Yeah,
they make fun of that in
Spaceballs.
And it's it's exactly, I love that. Hello, my baby. Hello, my baby. We won't stick on nitpicking the practical effects because that's not super fun. But the other one that I found is actually the mouth coming out. It doesn't feel like it's like.
On
the adult alien. It's like you can just tell it's like there's a track inside a track and it's like.
Oh, okay.
I found that.
So it just looks too rigid.
Yeah, like it needs a little more organic,
like
spread.
Wobble in it.
Yeah.
Okay. But I think the texture on it and the dripping.
Oh my god!
The drip factor is like wicked.
Even the transparency of the egg, like inside. Oh, that's, and the blue light too. I was like, this is pretty sick.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. The egg was really well
done. I had a question though. So when that character, he's like, oh, there's like a barrier of mist, and then like he's touching it, and all of a sudden he like. Rolls over and falls
he
in.
Just,
was that?
Yeah.
Did that like convince you guys? That looks super weird and fake
really
to me.
Yeah, it was a bad fall.
Yeah.
And then he doesn't say anything the whole time he's falling.
Yeah.
He's all like, ah! Yeah. He just like falls silently, and then after he's like, I slipped. It's kind of like, oh, that's what that was.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I love it. I think the one other practical effect that I found kind of meh was when Dallas was in the vent with the flamethrower and he turns around and the alien's like, ah!
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, that's totally a person in a costume.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't
jazz
pass.
Hands.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's got like the slightly rubber tips.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Is that like the biggest jump scare in the movie?
I think so. But the problem is that the music always helped you anticipate that something bad was going to happen. Like every time I was like, oh, obviously something bad's going to happen because there's weird, creepy music going on in the back. But I think that was only the only real jump scare kind of.
Do you think, as I said, I'm on the record as liking slow movies. I like 2001 Space Odyssey. I see a lot of influence from 2001 in this movie, by the way, just from the camera moves and the sets and stuff. And I like Blade Runner 2049. I love slow. This movie, though, I felt like it was almost too slow. One shot in particular struck me as being like, wow, this is like twice as long as it needs to be. And it's not even a visual feast. And that was when Brett, who's looking for the cat, stands under some drips.
Oh, yeah.
Rain. And he's just kind of like getting his head wet and putting his hat on and then continues to stand under the water. And then you're like, oh, man, someone's going to jump down on him or he's going to get lifted up. He's dead. His head's gone. And no, he just walks away from that. And
yeah. Why did he enjoy that so much, by the way?
What is going on? That was my question is like, that water's not clean. It's from a rusty old ship carrying coal. Like, that's nasty water.
I was wondering, I was like, okay, where is water at all? Where is it in this ship? Maybe like because they just went into that storm on that planet. It's like runoff, but like, yuck.
Yeah.
It's the condensation from the toilet tube.
It's pee.
Yeah.
We're learning something about Brett here.
Yes.
I think that shot, the way that it holds on him, works for me because the scene is building the suspense. And so like the longer you're on him, the more you're like, oh gosh, the alien's there. The alien's there. And so I think you're not wrong where the movie's a little slow, but in that particular case, it didn't bother me that much.
Okay. I actually thought that I thought the cat was going to serve. I was watching it. I was like, man, this thing with the cat, this is serving so many purposes.
Yeah.
I was like, one, they're like approaching this area, this locker that they think the alien's in. And they're like, oh my God, oh my God. And this is a cat instead. Damn it. And then the cat. So that's use number one. Then the cat runs away and like, all right, Brett, you got to go by yourself and find this cat. That's use number two. And then I thought use number three was going to be that the alien eats the cat and that's what allows it to grow so big. Because I was kind of sitting there thinking like just thermodynamics wise, like how does this thing go from the size of a baby's arm to like huge with no nutrients? Like it just doesn't make physical sense. And I thought if it eats some people or eats the cat along the way, then I can dig it.
Yeah.
But it actually doesn't eat the cat at that moment and it's already huge. But the cat does play a third role, which is when... it humanizes Ripley, shows her like caring nature, and she saves the cat. There's a famous screenwriting, like how to write a screenplay book called Save the Cat by Blake Snyder. And that's, you know, this is what it's from. It's from this. Like, Ripley should go save the cat so that you like Ripley.
Yeah.
And you can do that at any point in the movie. Another thing, pop culture wise, is the Bechdel test.
Ah, yes.
You know, the Bechdel test is that test. I think there's 8 items on it, which is like, is this movie like feminist or does it treat women fairly in the movie? And the big one that people always remember is there a scene with two women talking when they're not talking about a man? And the Bechdel test originated from like a cartoon that this one person drew, and in that cartoon they talk about the movie Alien.
Whoa. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I just saw that.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, wow.
They say that I have to go see the movie Alien. It's the only one because Ripley and what's the other character's name? They talk to each other about the monster.
Yeah, that's fair. So my question is, do you, like Sarah, as a woman, do you find it a little exploitive, the scene when she's like in her underwear and it's like the close-up shot and she like spread legs over the camera?
To put her leg into that space suit?
Yeah, I found that. I was like, that's a weird angle that they chose for this.
I never necessarily found it like too scandalous or whatever, like they were exposing her. I think that like it was very I don't know how to describe I was like, why does she need to strip down to go into the spacesuit?
But why is her underwear so tiny?
Right? Yeah, I was
dude,
thinking
the
that too.
back part is like 4 inches tall.
There was some butt crack in there.
A lot of
like
butt crack.
It's like one of the kids from the earlier scene left it on set. She's like, oh, this is your costume now. Children's underwear.
I don't know why they did that, but at the same time, I think maybe it just meant she felt comfortable enough to like strip down and do what she had to do in order to like save herself.
Totally. And I think if the movie's theme is like there's like an unnatural birth, unnatural whatever, like there's that undertone, then maybe going almost naked helps serve that, I guess.
Yeah, or like there's like a vulnerability aspect to it too.
Yeah, she's completely vulnerable, right?
I do love that sequence though when she's like slowly putting on this stuff and like she has her plan and you're like trying to figure it out and you're like, oh, okay, she's putting a spacesuit on. Oh, she's buckling in. Oh, she's going to draw the alien out with this gas. Oh, okay, she's going to kick it out. And then it doesn't go right and she has to like burn it. Ugh,
I think it's cool, but I have an issue with it. I didn't find it that compelling because she's not actually, like, she's only indirectly threatened. the alien's just like chilling there for whatever reason. instead of actually attacking her,
he's like moves like a cat.
It looked ridiculous, like, by the way. I was like, oh, it's just hanging out there. It's
I don't know if it's like trying to, if it knows like, oh, I should let this this other creature live now so that it can bring me to more food, or who knows what it's doing. But I just thought the fact that it's not actually attacking her, life's not under threat in that moment, that the final battle isn't really that compelling.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think if I was to redo it, I would keep those last two other characters, Yaphet Kotto and the other lady, I can't remember her name, alive, and then have them die as she's doing this sequence. And then you can have like the terror and drama of the dying also allowing her this time to escape. So it's like heightening it, and it's the actual climax. It feels like that moment doesn't feel like a climax, even though it's like the ultimate showdown with the monster.
That would have been a good way. Like, there's all this violence happening in front of her, and she's just trying to not get noticed while she sets up this plan. That would have worked.
Yeah, I don't think Ripley ever got in like a fist fight other than when the robot guy was attacking her, but she was very clearly losing that fight.
Oh,
she never like really was physically strong, but I guess that's supposed to show that like you can be super brain smart and still be able to save yourself. You don't have to have that like physical aspect.
I have a question about that fight. Is rolling up a magazine and like
that was
putting
weird.
It on top of their teeth an effective way of strangling someone?
It really looked like so he grabs like a newspaper or magazine, rolls it up, and then like starts to like shove it down her throat, and it really looked like she like let it go in her mouth because she had to as the actor, you know, where she really, I don't think that'd be very easy to do. He didn't grab her head with one hand and then like shove it in there with the other. She could have just like turned her head.
Yeah.
But whatever. I guess for some reason they wanted to put it in.
Yeah.
It is a scary thing. Very visceral. I can imagine having a big magazine in my mouth and it would suck.
Yeah. It's true. I think like, those really effective moments in horror movies are when like you can imagine what it's like to touch that thing. And you're like, okay, I can imagine that paper being shoved in my throat and I hate it.
Ink taste.
Like at that point too, the robot guy's leaking white liquid.
What happened? Why is he leaking?
I think it's just to signal to you that he's a robot. It just tells the audience something's not right with this guy.
For sure. Yeah. I get that aspect of it. But within the universe of the movie, is it because he's like super stressed that he's cooling by like releasing milk? Or like what's the in-universe explanation as to why he's sweating milk?
I'd have to watch again to know if he had like an impact on his head before that or something.
Audience, let me know why he sweats milk.
I got the milk sweats.
Got milk?
The only thing that those two together do that I thought was out of character was earlier, Ash and Ripley, they go into the infirmary to look for, I believe it's the facehugger at that point, and they walk in, and Ash walks farther into the room, and Ripley kind of stays in the doorway and eventually kind of like timidly, tentatively walks into the room, but she doesn't close the door behind her. And I was like, God damn it. I guess this is a horror movie. Please close the door behind you.
Yeah.
And the door is eventually closed, but it's closed by Ash. And like, number one, I just don't believe that Ripley wouldn't close it because that's her whole thing.
Yeah.
Is containing it.
Yeah.
I don't believe that she wouldn't do it. And then if someone does do it, why did Ash do it?
Mm. Yeah. I also found it weird that character suggested just putting them all in putting that the dude who was with the facehugger in like cryostasis. And I'm like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And like, I don't think it would have killed the alien because like those cryopods can have different species in it. It has a cat in it and survives.
Right.
And so like, I found that frustrating that they propose that as a solution. And then they're like,
They just left him open on the table and they're like, oh, he'll be fine in the morning.
And even like that sequence, like they're not very careful. Like they know that facehugger can jump, grab your face, and it's over.
Yeah.
And they're like, huh, I wonder where that alien is.
Yeah, and it actually just falls on her head.
Yeah.
Luckily, it's half dead.
Luckily, it's dead. But contrary to your point there, maybe the reason that they don't just like freeze it and Ash continues studying it is because by then, Mother and the company already know that they have the alien and they're trying to collate and understand it. And maybe if they find something out about it that they think is very valuable, it'd be nice to be near the planet that it was found so that they can go,
you know,
and go into all those leather egg sacks and get hundreds of these things.
That's totally fair.
Yeah.
You know what? You know what? That's a good solution.
Yeah, totally. Like, I guess that's what happens when you make an alien movie in the 70s.
I have a big gripe about the whole, this is like a fundamental issue. Maybe there is an answer to it and I hope we can find it. But it seems like by the end of the movie, the reveal is that the organization, the Waitani whatever corporation, knew something about this alien. And that's why they put the android on the ship so that he could be there to deal with this situation. But why? So if they planted this android and replaced the science officer with this person who could deal with the alien, why didn't they choose a more specialized ship and crew that could better contain this alien?
I don't know that it's implied. I mean, it's definitely convenient, and I don't have an explanation of why they did they purposely replace the dude with the android, or is it just coincidence, or is it related to the alien finding, or is it just because of like Dallas was losing it? I don't know.
Maybe, and maybe that's it. Maybe it's like they're unreliable, and what Dallas says is not perfectly true. But my interpretation was certainly that android was put there to get that alien. But it just seemed crazy that it's just a random mining crew. They're like, oh yeah, we're gonna put this specialized android to keep this alien alive. But maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. You tell me.
Who knows? Maybe it could be talked about in the sequels, which I haven't seen since like childhood. But maybe it's like they were just undergoing a period of company history where they were just downsizing, replacing people with androids. Yeah. I don't know.
Fair enough. Yeah. With milky, beady androids. It's a really weird inside of a robot.
He literally had like anal beads inside
it's
of him.
So
it's
weird.
So weird.
But I like it. I love stuff like that. That's just like they didn't just default to like blue blood, but everything else is mostly human and wires. It's like something entirely alien and weird.
How do they do the internals of the facehugger? They just had some like pork or something.
I looked it up.
Yes.
So it's actually oysters and mussels, and then they also used a sheep liver, I believe. And so that was like the internals of the facehugger. And then the egg was actually like a cow stomach. Oh. So that's why it was semi-transparent.
It's like a giant haggis.
Yeah, it's gross.
How do they Ripley's do the hand? Lips on the top?
That's probably just animatronic.
Yeah, I don't know. It's really good. I love how it opens like a flower. Yeah,
the thing inside is Ripley Scott, that's his name?
Ridley Scott.
Ripley. That's Ripley, whatever her name is. It's just his hands doing the thing.
No way, you're not joking?
No, it's in.
You're just doing like a shadow puppet.
Yeah, you're just like.
Oh, wow.
Interesting.
That's what he tells now. Mm. Maybe it wasn't true. He just remembers that way.
Here's this. You go ahead. You go ahead.
In this, I couldn't tell in this universe, have they met aliens before? Because they say this is the first alien like this that we've seen.
To me, that implied that they had seen other forms of life, and they weren't like losing their damn minds when they saw even that ship.
Yeah.
So I think that there's been other life.
That kind of leads to the question. I was kind of curious. What other movie universe do you think this movie best ties into? Like, could it like all of a sudden meld with? Because obviously, there's Alien versus Predator.
Yeah, Predator's a great fit, but that's off the table,
like,
I guess.
What else? Like, do you think, like, I can kind of imagine them return to Earth and it's like the Blade Runner world.
Well, that's because the director, that was his next movie.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's fair.
Yeah, because I can't see Star Trek.
It makes sense for Blade Runner because in Blade Runner, there's already off-world colonies that we know about.
Yeah.
They always talk about going off-world, so that's a thing. Total Recall.
Yeah, that's fair.
They're on Mars.
I would love to see that, though, Blade Runner-Alien crossover. Just like replicants versus an alien.
That'd be really cool, actually.
Yeah, and Deckard's like, normally I'd kill you, replicant scum, skin job, but I need your help.
Yeah,
exactly. Yes.
I remember when AVP was coming out, it was such a big deal. Me and my cousin were having debates about like who would win, Alien or Predator. And I realized the difference in philosophy between people. Because my cousin was like, Alien's so cool. I love Alien. They're so badass in all these ways. And I was like, Predator, obviously, because the audience, like, it's a humanoid. It has to win. Like,
yeah. Also, it's like, it's hunting alien for sport.
That's
a
job.
It's a fun thing to do for it.
It really, the question comes down to how many aliens are there? Does Predator get all of his weapons? Does Kevin McAllister, how much time does he have to set up his miniatures?
Yeah, you do three rounds with different, like, variables. I think Predator would come out in at least two or three.
Yeah.
And maybe bare knuckle brawl alien would win.
Oh, for sure, man.
Yeah.
That acid is crazy. When the scene where they're running around all the different decks because the acid is going through the hull.
Yeah.
That scene's like cool, but it's also like, what are you guys doing?
What's your
plan? Like hold your shirt underneath?
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't there even a shot where the guy has like something fabric and he looks like he's
I think they don't even do anything. They're just chasing it and they're like, maybe they're trying to assess the damage that it's
for
doing.
Sure.
But it feels really silly and like an excuse for the camera to follow the acid.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
You want to see how strong the acid is. You would follow it for sure. But like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. I have a question. And this isn't like really a big issue, but it's more of like a sincere question. What's the main theme of this movie? Because there's like all these questions that it poses. And I think it does a good job. Like it talks about fear of the unknown, corporate soullessness, unnatural sex and birth, like an allegory for rape. But like, what's the core theme of this movie?
I don't know, man. I have all these hints. There's so many different hints.
Yeah.
Of like, especially around like birth and motherhood and femininity. Like the AI is called Mother. Yeah. You go and you interact with the AI in this weird little womb kind of room.
Totally.
But I don't know what it's really trying to say.
Yeah.
It just seems like you wanted to have all these impressions, and maybe it's supposed to be like nonsensical like that. For example, you know, I'm a big Tool fan. There, the 90s videos, the Tool videos from the 90s were all stop motion, and they're really disturbing, and people try to figure out and interpret what they mean and like what the storyline, like what's happening in this video. But for a lot of them, like the videos for like Sober or Prison Sex, there is no narrative really. It's just supposed to be a series of disturbing images that evoke certain feelings. And so maybe the themes in this movie are more like that.
Yeah, and I think that can work where you don't state it so clearly that the audience has room to kind of put their own spin on it. I think that's like one of my minor gripes with this movie is that I don't feel like it has a point. It's just a good movie.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very like dynamic in its plot, I guess. It focuses on a lot of different topics, and so I guess it's up to the audience to like fill in those blanks and be like, oh, I want to focus on this aspect of the movie, or like I want to look more into this part of the movie. Even for me, who always wants to look into like the backstory or the meanings for each character, I was like, the cat means something, like there's got to be a deeper meaning for the cat, when really it is just there to like disturb shit or to have a deeper like, oh, of course Ripley is a more like kind person because she goes back to grab the cat after
she risks life and limb, even though prior to that she actually tosses that cat around in
and
that
the
crate.
Alien smells it too because she leaves it behind the first time she goes to stop the self-destruction, but then she goes back to save it. So
yeah, I was trying to figure, by that point, I was like kind of getting a little sleepy. I was like, wait, why does she not want to blow up the ship now? So she sets it to self-destruct, and then she realizes, like, she's going to blow up the whole main ship so that she can escape on the pod, the shuttle. And then she finds that her way is blocked by the aliens, so she can't get to the shuttle. So then she's like, okay, I have to totally not self-destruct the ship. She can't do that, but then she can get on the shuttle.
Yeah.
And then she gets on the shuttle. Yeah. But the alien's on there.
That felt like a weird sequence where they could have like fandangled it a little bit different, where she sets it for 15 minutes instead of 10 minutes. And now, okay, the alien's there. She has to figure out a solution of getting around. I think that'd be more interesting.
Did she have the choice of the countdown timer, though? I don't know if she had the choice.
Maybe not.
I think what happened was she had like 10 minutes, but after 5 minutes, she couldn't stop the self-destruct.
That's right.
So I guess she realized she couldn't get around the alien and she didn't want to attack it. So she wanted more time. And then she goes back to the countdown timer and is like, I want to cancel it. By that point, she can't anymore. Then she goes back and is like, I don't have a choice, takes the cat and then gets on the shuttle.
But she doesn't know at that point where the alien is.
Right. That's true.
Taking a nice beauty rest on that console.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like its hands underneath its ear. Like,
yeah, it's just having it's a nap. So weird. Like,
but here's a question. Why does that ship even have a self-destruct sequence? What is that? What? If you're building a ship, would you ever build that in? Here, let's just make a button where you can blow up the whole damn thing.
Yeah, maybe. Like, I think like if you're you have a technologically advanced thing that you don't want your competitors to get a hold of. Like, yeah, maybe there's pirates from between the corporations that are like taking over ships, and instead of letting a pirate get your ship, it's better to just blow it up.
Or maybe the whole ship is a message for Ethan Hunt that will self-destruct after he reads it.
This is just a movie taking like place inside a teenyverse. It's molecular level, and this is actually just the message making its way to Ethan Hunt.
Yeah, yeah. Like that whole ship is actually just embedded in his sunglasses.
Oh my god!
Can you imagine like the final shot? It just like zooms out, and there's Ethan Hunt. And he's like, mission accepted.
Oh my god!
It's all fractal.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
I would love that.
Yeah, yeah. And the space jockey is just a tiny little figurine.
Yeah, I would love to see E.T. in this movie too. I wonder. I wonder what that would be like.
Yeah, AVPV E.T.
Yeah, E.T. just get in that damn cat crate.
E.T. go home.
This movie has one of those marketing taglines that you've probably heard of, but you might not even know what movie it's from. In space, no one can hear you scream. That is badass. It was written by Barbara Gipps.
Yep.
I knew of that my whole life. I wouldn't even have guessed it was from Alien.
Yeah.
You feel like even say that when like anything sci-fi, if there's noise, like in space, there's no, you can't scream.
Yeah.
It's just the type of like slogan that dads were saying, like walking into the theater with their kids to any sci-fi movie for the next 20 years.
Have you guys watched any of the other Alien movies?
Yeah, I've seen Aliens, but again, like I was like a teenager, mm-hmm. and I saw Resurrection when it came out. Haven't seen Covenant. I saw the one everyone hates, Prometheus. I remember it having at least one sweet scene where like giving birth. And what do you remember that?
Not really. I can remember. Yeah. That movie had cool ideas, but it's slow. It's boring. It's got some stupid stuff too.
I watched the ad for it, and I was kind of like, I don't know. But I watched Aliens like 2 weeks ago, so I watched it before I ended up watching Alien, and I noticed that Aliens was like a lot more action based versus the like scare factor.
It's really similar to Terminator and Terminator 2.
Mm.
There's such parallel franchises in a way. Weird. Isn't that weird? They both have James Cameron directing the sequel. The sequels are both more action-y, and for a lot of people, you saw the sequel before the first one.
Yeah.
They're both like all-time kind of favorite movie franchises. They're both franchises that spawned really shitty sequels again and again and again that like seem to be irredeemable, but the first two are good.
Yeah.
So bizarre.
Yeah.
I could see those universes going together too.
Oh,
that'd be
sick. Yeah.
Terminator versus Alien? That would have to be so much cooler than Predator.
Whoa, how would that work? Like, okay, never mind. The humans flee Earth, but there's a Terminator on board, and then they crash land on like an alien planet.
I think it has to be a good Terminator, so he's been turned to help the humans. And maybe there's a timeline where John Connor gets killed by Alien, and so they have to send back a Terminator to save him.
I like this concept. I'm going to write a spec screenplay just about this. This is so cool.
Yes.
Oh, man. That's good.
Whoa.
You guys have anything else you want to say?
You know it's a horror movie when one of the crew members say, man, this place gives me the creeps.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
That was Parker. I actually want to talk about Parker. I love that guy, man. He had more personality than anybody in the whole movie. He even says it to Brett. You know why people don't come down here? You ain't got no personality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That guy's awesome.
Daffic Kodo. Love him.
Yeah. He was also a badass. He's like, he literally took charge and he was like, I'm going to go kill the alien because nobody else is capable. So then he goes and he takes the flamethrower. Unfortunately, that didn't end too well for him. But at least he tried. And at least he like took the forward step and went for it.
Yeah, and he's also kind of like stepping beyond like the hierarchy of the ship. Because he's just like just a mechanic, him and Brett. They're kind of the lower cast on the ship.
Not even getting a full share.
Yeah, exactly. And now he's like, okay, fuck the execs. It's up to me. I'm making this happen right now. It's also kind of cool that the remaining three people are two women and a black guy.
Yeah.
But I don't think that Parker really got his just desserts. But yeah, he's awesome though. And at the beginning, there's one thing that this movie is known for is the audio design, because they have a lot of like incomprehensible conversations.
Yeah.
Notably their breakfast when they're all eating after waking up from cryosleep. There's just a bunch of conversations like overlapping and stuff like that. It's so weird. It's an interesting way to characterize people.
I like it. I think it does a good job of getting you to like know a lot of them a little bit very quickly.
And how they relate.
Yeah. I think it works to kind of lull you into this false sense of security that will very quickly be ripped away.
And it's scary too. When they're on that ship on the planet, there's like so much environmental ambient noise that a lot of their conversations are kind of garbled and you're like, I don't know what's going on.
Totally. Yeah. I love the juxtaposition of the really loud noises, either like the ship noise or the wind. And then it'll cut back to the interior of the ship to someone doing something and it's totally silent.
That was another thing that I was like, 2001.
Yeah.
That was really 2001.
Yeah, totally.
Yep. The noise contrast really like set the tone, especially when they're off of the spaceship and they're out on the planet and it's like super loud. And then they cut back to the spaceship where it's just dead silent. And it gives you that like uneasy feeling.
Totally.
So, yeah.
I love this movie.
Yeah. It was good.
It does put me to sleep. Not against the movie. Like I fall asleep a lot, but
a lot of people fall asleep to horror movies.
Yeah. Very peaceful.
Yeah, I
don't think
soothing
you're one
for
of them.
My soul.
Not for you though. No. In general,
I'm too much of a scaredy cat.
Yeah,
I don't find this movie scary though.
No, I didn't find it scary either.
Yeah, on your scale of 0 to 10 of horror, what's the amount of horror this is?
2.
What's a 10?
That's a good question. I don't. It depends on like what kind of scary we want to go for, because I could do like psychological scary, which I feel like Midsommar really had a lot of tones of.
Very, a lot of dread.
Yeah. Or you could go like Hereditary scary, where there's floating people. I don't know if either of you have
seen Hereditary. Oh, yeah, we love Hereditary.
Love Hereditary. Yeah. We won't spoil it here. I think we should cover it eventually.
Yeah.
Around Halloween or something. That movie's sick.
I love that movie.
Ari Aster's sweet. Is he working on something now?
I don't know. I just listened to a podcast with him, so. Anywho.
Yeah, what's the scariest good movie? Because there's like all the like Paranormal Activities that are just like scary, but they're not good movies.
I would really have to think about that. I don't think I could give a direct answer right off the top of my head. Like, Silence of the Lambs is really good.
But I wouldn't say that's, like,
it's
scary.
In the thriller part of the spectrum. Thriller.
Totally.
I would say Hereditary, but that's because I don't have a lot of experience with horror.
We shouldn't talk about it anymore. We're going to spoil it. We'll save it.
But this movie wasn't scary at all.
Yeah.
Like I said before, the music set the tone for something bad's going to happen. And so you just knew. And then also, since it's from the 70s, the special effects weren't like super terrifying. I was like, you can tell there's a human in a costume.
Yeah.
What is cool about it, though, is that you don't know what they're chasing. Because first it's just this little thing. You go, and leaves the room.
Yeah.
And then it's like suddenly just getting bigger. And every encounter, you kind of think it's going to be a little bit different.
So. Yeah.
And something that I noted down actually was, you only see the xenomorph, the alien, for like 4 minutes out of the whole movie. So it's really up to your brain to kind of figure out what's really happening or premeditate that those scare scenes.
You never see it in full. You just see it's like carapace, like its head. You see a lot of close-ups on the mouth. Sometimes you see it's like forearms.
Yeah, I think we made jokes about like the goofy parts of the island, but I think most of the time you see it, they do a good job knowing the limitations of what that suit was and not showing you the silly rubber
bits. Do you know
much
about the suit and like how it's made? Person goes in it?
There's a person in it, yeah. There's like a documentary on YouTube about the person in the suit. Not a documentary, but a YouTube video.
He was born in 1925. The guy. It's such a cool alien design.
Oh,
it's so, that's, I think, one of the biggest reasons people like about this movie is the production design and just how out there and creative it all is. Because even like Predator, it's like, it's just kind of like a humanoid.
Yeah, the only thing is that the mouth opens
weird
sideways.
Mouth.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think it's iconic.
For sure.
Honestly.
Yeah, mouth coming out, penis head. Like.
yeah, that like really elongated
it's cool.
Forehead back thing. And then they got the long tail, the acid blood. It's just awesome.
Even the face hugger is iconic.
Yeah.
Like.
Oh, so they're actually, I think the face hugger might be one of the creepiest creations that people have thought of.
When it's on his face
and
then they try and take it off. Oh, it's breathing. And then they try and take it off.
You can see those little sacs inflating and deflating.
And then when the thing around his neck tightens, I felt that.
How did they build that? Like, there's like a close-up on that tail that wraps around his neck, and it looks great. It looks as realistic as like any snake.
It's probably an animatronic that they just have like a wire that can tighten or something.
Well, I'm not asking how it moves, but like how is it just the texture of its skin and stuff? It just looks awesome.
They did a good job.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, it looks cool.
Next week we'll have to have a special effects artist come in.
Yes.
So you know it's all done.
Oh, but you get like the fact like it's smothering your face. That's like that claustrophobia is just frightening in and of itself. Then it's like got those creepy fingers that look like real bony.
Yeah.
Then it's choking you. That's a whole other thing you can be afraid of. And then it's raping your face and putting eggs into you. You get
terrifying.
The body horror aspect.
Yeah.
And then they crawl in a creepy way. Like, one of the reasons I think that people are afraid of snakes and spiders is because our human brains can't comprehend their movement. The way their mobility is just so weird that, and I can't look at eight legs and like know where they're all heading at once. That's why they're creepy. You don't know which direction they're going to move or how fast or what. And the facehuggers have that too. Plus, they fucking jump.
Yeah.
Oh, and they're coming right for your face. They're just so creepy.
Love it.
Oh, and also, it melted right through his helmet.
Yeah.
So weird.
It had been enough time. So when he gets attacked in his spacesuit, I was like, is that even going to do anything? Is he just going to put it in a bag and bring it on the ship or what? Then they bring it in, and it's like so embedded, and it kind of foreshadows the acid blood thing. And then they had to just crack his helmet off. Ugh.
Yeah, I was not expecting that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Did you know when Dan O'Bannon, the writer of this movie, pitched it to Hollywood producers, he literally walked in and said, Jaws in space. And they were like, sold.
Yeah, Jaws was the biggest hit.
You got to hand it to a writer when they have like a good pitch or good call.
Well, like, yeah, Jaws was one of the biggest hits of all time at that point. And then Star Wars had just come out.
Exactly.
So it's like Star Wars with Jaws. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to have a good comp. A comp is like a comparatives where you take two things that people understand and you put them in one kind of pitch to someone. So it would be like James Bond starring Hermione Granger. And you're like, okay, that sounds interesting. I know those two things, but that's a weird twist. People can just get it. I think there's one. Wow. There's a famous one for Jurassic Park, too. Fuck it. Don't even put that in.
Dinosaurs with...
just dinosaurs.
Roller Coaster Tycoon.
Yes. It's Jaws, but older and on land.
Pre-Jaws.
Giant lizards.
That's what they should have called it. It was Jaws Zero. Man, naming things, it's hard.
Yeah. Well, okay, also the fact they named this movie Alien because there's one alien, and then the second movie is Aliens because there's multiple aliens.
Yeah, that's badass. that's a genius play. First of all, calling this movie Alien it's like, sorry, all other movies.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the Alien movie. Yeah.
Steven Spielberg with E.T. is like,
what's the next best thing?
What the hell? That's hilarious, actually. Yeah, and then when they thought of, okay, the sequel's got to be called Aliens. And then, God damn it, the third one, what are we going to call
was
that?
Was it like a Alien with the E being a 3? Was that what it originally was, or is that just my imagination? Because that would be way better. And way worse.
Yeah, both of those. No, I don't know. And then after that, they had to get the subtitles, Resurrection and Covenant.
Yeah.
And Prometheus.
They should have just stopped at Aliens.
That's not how money-making works.
Some people like the third one.
Third one's okay. It's better than Resurrection.
I haven't seen it. So.
I haven't seen either, but she's in jail in that one, right?
In 3.
Oh.
Or she in jail, or she's just on a prison planet?
She's on a prison planet because she is like rescued. She's like, she gets stranded. She has a shuttle. Like, there's a malfunction on the ship. The shuttle has to go, and they land on a prison planet. And so she, I can't remember how it happens, but I think the dog or something gets infected. So it's like a dog alien. That might be Resurrection, though. I don't know. They all suck.
Wait, Alien 3 is David Fincher, though.
Yeah, but...
Is it?
Spartacus is also Stanley Kubrick, so...
I didn't see that one.
It's okay.
I didn't go much farther back than, like, Paths of Glory.
Why did I pull up a dowsing rod? Oh, the cat. I was, like, expecting the cat to be a dowsing rod.
What is a dowsing rod?
Where it's, like, it's, like, a rod that, like, helps point you towards things.
Isn't that, like, a divining?
Yeah, divining rod. Yeah, it's, like, the same thing.
Oh, okay. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. I was like expecting the cat to like be that, and it'd be better than like the machine they have that like can kind of track the alien. They have the cat, and it's like meow.
And the next, meow, in the second meow. One, they have another proximity device thing that like beeps when it's near.
It's way better, and that's more iconic. Yeah. It has the like screen that it can track it. That's what's in the video games too.
It's interesting that they bring that. Oh man, one of the scariest video games I ever had was an alien game.
Really?
Yeah, it was first person, and you're just on the ship, and it was really dark. Mm. It was a horror game.
Is this pretty recent, like 2014-ish?
God no.
Oh
no, no. This is PlayStation 2 or 1 maybe.
There's the AVP games that are excellent games. AVP 2002 or 2000? I don't know. It's good.
All right. Well, Sarah, thanks for joining us today. And
thank you for having me.
We'll have you back sometime. Aww. And we got to figure out what we're doing next week. I guess Riley's going to be back.
Yeah. Maybe
with his baby.
Aww.
Oh, yeah.
Baby will be our first guest.
We'll get the baby on the podcast.
No, that'd be weird. Babies are dumb.
So guys, just give us a tweet or an email for the movie that you want to see. Maybe we'll do a poll. I don't know what we're gonna do. You can tweet at us at Carpool Critics, and you can email us carpoolcriticspodcast@gmail.com, and you can give us a review on all those platforms and more. Just tell us how you like Sarah.
I love movie. I'm wearing an A24 shirt today.
Hell, what is that shirt? It's A24 Films LLC, established 2012. New York.
Yeah.
Is there anything on the back?
No, it's empty. But
where'd you get it?
A24.
What, you like?
I bought it online.
Oh, like from their site?
Yeah.
Nice. Oh, sweet.
Yeah, I'm an A24 addict.
Yeah, what's up with that?
I have, like, this is my ranking list
of their A24 movies.
Of the movies that I've watched and which ones I like.
How many have they made or distributed since 2012?
A lot. I don't have an exact number, but I've watched 18 of them, so it's pretty good. Some of them are really bad.
Look out, David. You got another list maker.
Oh, no.
How many records is your spreadsheet?
There's one movie they made, like, way back, beginning 2012, A24. It's called Tusk, And it's like Human Centipede, except they turn the guy into a walrus.
Hell yeah.
Oh, it
sounds great.
Just look up pictures and you'll be like, oh no.
In the vein of Elephant Man kind of thing.
It's weird. It's so weird.
Have you seen Serbian film?
Yes.
No. You've seen it?
I've seen it.
That's the movie that I know what it's about and I don't want to see it.
No, don't watch it.
I don't want to be.
It's not that good.
It'll
it's
be too disturbing.
It's too much.
I love disturbing movies.
You might like it. Oh, it's like made to be the most disturbing movie it can possibly be.
I
think just this photo of the prosthetic in Tusk is all.
Oh, Tusk! It's got this guy from Jeepers Creepers and the Mac commercials. Is that who that is?
Maybe.
Is that him? Oh my gosh! How the great have fallen. Yeah.
I don't know if that.
It is him. It is him.
What's his name?
Justin Long.
Yeah.
And the director of this movie is a comedian.
Oh.
They just try to make a horror movie. I'm like, oh, I don't know.
I feel like I heard a horror bit or like a podcast bit where they were saying that comedy and horror are actually the closest genres there is.
Weird.
Like, why?
I think it's because it's all about like setting something up and like giving you a different take on what you're expecting. I don't know. I'm not that person that's.
Ew,
that.
This looks disgusting.
Right?
He looks like a giant toe with a mustache.
It was so bad. I don't know what they were thinking. But my top three are Moonlight, Midsummer, and Mid-90s.
I've seen Mid-90s. I've seen those all.
I haven't seen Mid-90s.
That was the Jonah Hill director one, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. It was really good. I enjoyed it.
Or was that Eighth Grade?
Nope. Eighth grade was Bo Burnham, I think. No, not Bo Burnham.
Yeah, it's Bo Burnham.
Bo Burnham, yeah.
That one's pretty good.
Actually, I haven't seen Mid-90s then.
It's about a kid.
When?
In the mid-90s.
Whoa.
And if you want more content, David has something special this week.
Oh yeah, I'm making a Last of Us Part 2 review on my channel. So I'll have that linked below. Or you can follow me on Twitter at TheChosenDavid and get the update as soon as it happens.
An hour long.
It's an hour long, yeah.
It's an hour long,
put a
Last
lot of, work
of Us
into
fans.
It.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
I've read it.
You read it.
Ooh, jealous. I don't get the sneak peek.
No.
All right, check it out, guys. Love you. Bye.
Bye.
On behalf of Riley, love you.
Love you.